Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. It is Thursday, July 30th, 2015. I'm here in Clearwater, Florida with overcast skies, so it's going to be cooler today. It was only 80. It's only 80 today. That's good. Today we're going to be talking about air and air pollution and the air pollutants that can be making us sick, both in outdoor air and indoor air. What's toxic about air? And my guest today is toxicologist Dr. Stephen Gilbert. He's a regular guest on the show, and he's helping us understand the toxicity of common chemicals that we may be frequently exposed to. And if you're listening to this show, you are being exposed to outdoor air pollutants for sure, and indoor air pollutants if you don't know about them and haven't been doing things to clean them up. So we're going to find out all about this today. What are the pollutants and what to do? Dr. Gilbert is the author of a very good book called A Small Dose of Toxicology, which you can get on his website for free. And everybody should have one. I just think it's a good place to start with toxicology. And his website is toxipedia.com. Dr. Gilbert, is it an org or a com?
Org.
Toxipedia.org. I didn't have it right in front of me. So, hi, Dr. Gilbert. How are you?
Pretty good, Deborah. How are you this morning?
I'm good. And I actually want to start by saying something first. Usually I let you talk, but I have a post on my blog, on my website, that talks about air pollution is now the world's single largest environmental risk to health. And that was stated by the World Health Organization in March of 2014. There may be more recent numbers about this. But it says that they list deaths. They're not just talking about runny noses and it's hard to breathe. So here are the outdoor air pollution caused deaths. 40% of heart disease, 40% of stroke, 11% of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, 6% of lung cancer, and 3% of lower respiratory infections in children. And so here, what we're talking about today is not just how does it affect your health, it's talking about people dying. That's what I wanted to start with.
Yeah, that is really, really great starting point, because air pollution is a worldwide issue. It is a serious matter for everybody to be thoughtful about. And I have some statistics, too, about that, that according to what I have, this is from a Mother Jones article, it was a great article about air pollution, you know, over 1.5 million people worldwide die of heart disease, 1.4 of stroke, lung cancer, 222,000 chronic pulmonary disease, 3,000 people die every year of lung air pollution as a consequence of air pollution. So it really is a very serious matter, both indoor and outdoor. And I'll just take us back, air pollution has been with us a long time. We still have not talked about this issue, but the United States is doing better than some countries. And I'll just read this little quote here. As soon as I had gotten out of the heavy air of Rome and from the stink of the chimneys thereof, which being stirred poured forth whatever pestilent vapors and soot that there closed to them, I felt an alteration in my disposition. This is by Seneca in 61 B.C.
Yeah.
The Roman philosopher, known essayist. So air pollution has been a serious matter as our population has increased for a long time.
Yes, it has. It has. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to do the first half of the show on outdoor air pollution, and then let's move to indoor air pollution instead of mixing them up. Let's separate them out. So why don't you start by telling us what are some of the air pollutants that people are being exposed to outdoors?
Well, outdoor, probably the most serious one is ozone, which is O3. So it's a very serious pollutant. Ozone at the upper stratosphere is very important. Many people probably heard of the ozone hole in the upper atmosphere. And ozone in the upper atmosphere is very important because it protects us from ultraviolet light. But down low, it being a serious lung irritant. And so it's very important that we control that. And it's produced by nitrogen oxides, for example, that are produced by cars, too many cars on the road. And I think that's where a lot of air pollution comes from is cars. Industrial pollution, such as coal-fired utility plants, are a very important producer of air pollution. In particulate matter, diesel particulate matter is important. If you live near a port, a very active port, you know all about the air pollution that comes off the ports and the diesel engines that run the big ships that come in and out. Certainly here in Seattle, we certainly see a lot of that. We've been trying to hard to reduce the amount of soot that's produced by these generators that are on the ships, so they plug in, so they plug into the grids. They're not running their big engines right next to the city. So there are things we can do about air pollution. Sulfur dioxide is another important air pollutant that produces acid rain and really clouds the atmosphere. Pollutants that come out are also mercury, for example, with coal-fired utility plants produce mercury that gets in the atmosphere. The mercury comes down as rain, with the rain into the dirt, into the soil, it ends up in the rivers and the oceans, and gets into the fish we eat. So there's all kinds of different kinds of outdoor air pollutants that are really critical. And, of course, it all leads to climate change. You've got too much carbon dioxide from the pollutants that come out of our cars, from our industrial systems. And this is causing global warming and global climate change, which we're all becoming more and more familiar with. And I think in Florida, for example, that's going to be really serious because it's starting to melt the ice in the poles of the earth, and that's going to cause great increases in sea level. And sea level rise is going to flood many things. So it's really, air pollution is really has many, many different effects, as well as affecting our health and well-being. So it's really important to pay attention to air pollution. EPA has tried to regulate more of that. The United States actually has pretty good clean air laws. It's done a really good job trying to clean up the air, but it's still a big issue. And you see the effect, consequences of India and China and other developing countries that have a lot of coal-burning plants, and the air pollution comes off of those. And the air gets into the upper atmosphere, and it ends up in us. Like in the West Coast here, we see the pollution from China and other developing countries in our atmosphere. So it is something we really got to look at as a global issue and look at. And we have done that in the past with ozone, for example, and volatile organic compounds and trying to reduce the amount of ozone contaminants that are killing off the ozone in the upper stratosphere. So we can do this. I think climate change, and that's something also got to be thinking about as air pollution goes.
Well, what can individuals do at home or in their personal lives to help reduce air pollution? Because I think it's pretty clear that almost anywhere you are, particularly if you're in a city or in a place like you are in Seattle, where the pollution is coming from other countries across the Pacific, that there's going to be more air pollution, and that if you're out in the country where you're not next to so much car exhaust and things like that and industrial pollution, that the air is going to be cleaner. But I think it's probably safe to say that there probably isn't a place on Earth where the air is actually clean.
No, you're absolutely right, Deborah. You know, it is a really a serious problem. Industrialization of the globe is causing more and more air pollution. You look historically, like the outdoor air pollution, Donner smog that occurred in 1948 in Donner, Pennsylvania, was produced by U.S. Steel Corporation and Donner Zinc Works, American Steel, produced enormous quantities of air pollution. The air got inverted in the sense that there was a cold air got stuck to the bottom there, so the air pollution stayed very low. And over 7,000 people died during this period of time.
Yeah.
So we've sort of moved away from these gross examples of air pollution in the United States, but we still see issues. When you go out and look out in the ocean or out in Seattle area here, you see the pink sunsets. That's due to particulate matters in the air. So we've learned that particulate matters, in particular, even very small ones, they're a PM2.5, so that's particulate matters 2.5 micrometers in diameter, very small, fine particles, are a serious product of air pollutants. They get into our lungs, move into our lungs, deep into our lungs, and cause this heart disease and other conditions that actually do lead to death, as well as asthma and things like that. But it's very important that we consider air pollution and look at ways we can reduce it. For example, I've moved.
We need to go to break. So let's go to break, and then when we come back, you can tell us how we can reduce it. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Dr. Stephen Gilbert. He's the author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, which you can get at toxipedia.org, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and I'm sorry, I'm a little distracted here. During the break, I was looking up, you mentioned the Mother Jones article about air pollution. Well, I found 5 articles in Mother Jones, all about, I mean, it was like a big thing just now in June in 2015. And the one I have in front of me right now is, it's about our national parks. And they rated 12 parks most harmed by air pollution. And so I'm looking at this picture of Yosemite. I used to live in California, and I've been to Yosemite National Park, and it's absolutely gorgeous. And when you go there, it's way high in the Sierra Nevada mountains. It's got these gorgeous peaks, mountain peaks, and you think if there's any place in the world where there's going to be clear air, it would be Yosemite. And it was one of the 4 national parks to regularly have unhealthy air pollution levels. Yosemite National Park. And so this just is, you know, what I was talking about earlier, that there isn't a place on Earth where you can go and breathe clean air. And that's just astonishing to me.
Yeah, it really is depressing. It's and I think that you asked earlier, what can we as individuals do? And I think it gets a little bit into politics, but also I think we can do some things, and that is, one is solar panels. We need to stop producing electricity from these large centralized systems that produce a lot of air pollution on their own, like coal-fired utility plants, even the gas plants produce a lot of air pollution. We know how to stop some of that. But I'll just give you an example. In the last 30 days, I put solar panels in my house about a year ago. In the last 30 days, I've generated 1.2 megawatts of electricity. Right at the moment, I'm generating over 3,000 watts of electricity. And yesterday, I generated 47 kilowatts of power. That doesn't sound like a lot. It's not a lot, but it's a lot from a house that way overran it. And I sold back to a utility company 24, almost 25 kilowatts hours of electricity back to the power plant. So I think it's really important to us as individuals. I also got an electric car this year, so I try to plug in my electric car and charge it off the solar panels, so we're not using power from the grid. In Florida, of course, and many places in the United States have got great opportunities to move towards solar, but we've got to have better laws that encourage this. Washington State's got great incentives to move towards solar. Florida, not so much.
And I think that's exactly right. It used to be, first I want to say, I just want to remind the listeners that you're in Seattle, and that like your cloud cover, percentage of cloud cover days, because it's raining so much, is enormous. And you're still getting that amount of energy that you just described. Here in Florida, we have so many sunshine days, and there's so much sunshine here that actually, I think it was back in the 20s or something, there was actually a lot of solar. It was like almost everybody had solar hot water. That was the way they did it. And, and we've lost all that easy solar technology. It's all been replaced by this pollution energy technology. And we could easily do this. For me, I would have solar panels on my house in a minute if I could afford it. If there was government incentive here, I'd do it in a minute. So
Washington State's got great incentives, and that gets into politics. I think we have to talk to our representatives and say, look, we want solar. We want distributed power generation and move away from these large centralized power systems.
I totally agree. So another thing would be, so if we, how can I say this? If we use less energy in our homes, then are the power systems still going to generate that energy whether we use it or not?
Yeah, like I generate it, and the systems are set up so that all the power, excess power generated, goes back to the grid. So my neighbors are using the power that I generate. So yesterday I sold 25 kilowatt hours of power back to the electric company. I have not paid an electric bill since last July when I installed the system on my house. So there is ways to do this, and the power companies have got to get on board with allowing us to do this and adapting to the fact that as individuals, we can generate a lot of power in our homes. And it's really important we do that because that reduces the pollution that's and the amount of power that's required from these utility plants. And if we move toward electric cars, we also use power from those plants in our houses that we generate ourselves, but we also reduce the pollution that we're putting out in the atmosphere for our cars. Because we have an electric car that's pollution-free, which is just great.
I think we've got to be... that's great. You know, I would do exactly what you're, what you've done. I just need to figure out how to make that work financially for me. I got a smaller car this year because my other car totally broke down. And so I bought a very fuel efficient car and I'm very happy I did that. But even if people were to move to having more economic cars, fuel economic cars, that would reduce it a lot.
Yes, it would. Unfortunately, gas prices have dropped, so people are moving back to less fuel-efficient cars. But very important, and I really honor your decision to buy a more fuel-efficient car. That might seem like a small thing, but it's actually a big thing that we can all do to contribute to reducing pollution in the atmosphere. Reducing greenhouse gases is really important for us to reduce greenhouse gases so we're not contributing to climate change. And we're starting to be thinking of future generations and our children's children and what kind of globe we want to leave them. If we're not careful, we're going to end up with a lot of ocean rises, increase in ocean levels. There's going to flood out a lot of property. A lot of people live on the coast. It's going to cause all kinds of problems. Look at the maps in Florida, and particularly vulnerable to this.
Yes. I just want to ask you quickly, because we only have about a minute before the break. But so what can people do to protect their health from outdoor air pollution when they're walking around?
Well, you know, that's more difficult because, again, we don't have a lot of control of the outdoor air pollution. But I think the important thing is to look out for ozone in particular. If it's a high, bad pollution day, you know, monitor the radios and then don't exercise. There's a lot of pollution in the atmosphere. But, you know, I think the big thing is we've got to ask the representative to reduce the amount of air pollution, support the Environmental Protection Agency. It's really discouraging me to see that some of the Republican nominees want to wipe out the EPA, wanted to reduce its authority. And we've got to give our government regulatory agencies more authority to help reduce the air pollution that we inhale. So we're inhaling air pollution.
Yeah, it's just way too much air pollution. So I just want to mention before we go to break that one of the things that I recommend is to take a product called Liquid Zeolite. The brand I like is Pure Body Liquid Zeolite because it removes heavy metals and other things from your body in situations where you can't control the exposure. And this is one of those situations. Outdoor air pollution is one of the reasons why I take this every day. And if you go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com, look up this show in the archives, there'll be information there about how you can order that if you decide to do that. So we're going to go to break, but we'll be back. And when we come back, we'll talk about indoor air pollution with Dr. Stephen Gilbert, author of A Small Dose of Toxicology. And you can get that free at Toxipedia.org. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Dr. Stephen Gilbert, author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, which you can get free at Toxipedia.org. And so I want to start this segment with the statement that according to the United States Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, they have called indoor air pollution the nation's number one environmental health problem. So now we have the World Health Organization saying that outdoor air pollution is the number one environmental health problem in the world. And now then the EPA says that indoor air pollution is the nation's number one health problem. And they say that since people spend more than 90% of their time inside, the quality of our indoor air impacts our health far more than that of outdoor air. And so some things that indoor air pollution can cause is irritation to the eyes, nose, and throat, headaches, dizziness, fatigue, asthma, hypersensitivity, pneumonia, and long-term effects can include respiratory disease, heart disease, and cancer, and it can be severely debilitating or fatal. This is what our United States Environmental Protection Agency has to say about indoor air pollution. Okay, I'll let you talk now.
You made some great points in that. You know, indoor air pollution is really critical, especially for young children, because children are not little adults. They eat more, breathe more, and drink more than adults do for body weight. Their airways are not as big as adults. So air pollution, indoor air pollution is really important for young, because they also spend more time indoors. And also for the elderly, they'll often have compromised lung function and also spend a lot of time indoors. So indoor pollutants are really important. A lot of our products outgas chemicals. For example, if you go to the store and buy, you know, one of your rubberized or plastic shower curtains, that shower curtain is going to off-gas phthalates and other chemicals, and you can, that sort of new smell, plastic smell, is an important source of air pollutants that we inhale. You also, if you have it in your bathroom, you do not have a fan, you increase humidity in the bathroom, you get mold in the bathroom. That mold outgasses particulate matter, and you also inhale that, and you get asthma and other conditions from that. So there's lots of issues with air pollution. It's actually hard to know where to start. You've got things like radon. Certain places in the country, for example, eastern Washington or certain parts of Pennsylvania. I don't know about Florida so much.
You know, we don't have it here.
You don't? Or you do?
No, we don't.
Yeah, but radon causes lung cancer from the radiation it produces from that, and you can inhale that. So there's all kinds of different aspects of air pollutants. It's 3 billion people around the globe use wood, animal dung, crop waste, coal for cooking and for heating their homes. Those will produce a lot of indoor air pollution. People use wood in Seattle, Washington, other places in Washington State. People still have wood burning stoves. There's actually sort of a community in the city of Seattle. There's a lot of wood burning stoves and sort of down a little valley, so it gets a lot of air pollution there. That can be very reactive for some people, and some people have really trouble breathing in wood smoke filled air, which causes a lot of problems in both outdoor moves, indoor air pollution. And I have to just mention lead for a second. You know, we added lead to gasoline in the 30s, and we produce a horrible mess of lead pollution, which goes indoors and outdoors, and kids are exposed to lead from cars that once burned lead. Fortunately, we got rid of most of the lead from gasoline in 1990, which is a great move. It's still, for example, used in airplanes, propeller-driven airplanes, have leaded gasoline, which spreads lead around the outdoor, but that it moves indoors. Particulate matter from lead gets trafficked inside. And for example, with pesticides, the same thing. You use a lot of pesticides outdoors. You bring them indoors, gets in the carpets. The carpet has dust in them. Who's in the breathing zone of that carpet? Kids again. So kids are exposed to particulate matter that moves indoors, like pesticides and lead are two good examples. There's a whole bunch of other examples. So it really is a complicated thing, and I think indoor air pollution is an underrated problem.
I totally agree with you. So I've been writing about indoor air pollution for a very long time. I've been writing on the whole subject of toxics for more than 30 years. And indoor air pollution was one of the first things that I started writing about. And at that time, it wasn't even called indoor air pollution. They hadn't even done the studies yet. But I knew from my own experience and the experience of others that when we were breathing these things, then we felt sick. And when we didn't breathe them, then we didn't feel sick. And it was pretty clear, even though studies had not yet been done at that time. And so things like carpets give off fumes that are very toxic. Yeah. Things like, I know in my particular case, I was being made very sick by the chlorine fumes that were coming off of the water in my shower. And it's not just chlorine. It mixes with other things in the water, so it actually turns into chloroform. And chloroform is that thing, you know, like in old movies when the villain would put that cloth over the heroine's face to knock her out. That's chloroform. That's what it just really does knock you out. And so I would actually faint when I would take a shower from the amount of chloroform that was in my water. And all of these are considered to be indoor air pollutants. And I want to mention that there's two things that people can do for indoor air pollution. One is my website is full of products that don't emit toxic chemicals, you know, things like paints and, you know, even like the materials used to make your bed and your pillows and clothing and all these things, they're all emitting toxic chemicals into the air. And so you can...
fire sheets, things like that, perfumes, deodorizers, Epsom deodorizers, all emit and are outgassing.
Yeah, I remember when I first started being interested in this, one of the things I had just done is taken, you know, that vinyl shelf paper that's sticky on the back, and I thought it was so pretty, and so not only did I put it on the shelves, I lined my whole cabinets with vinyl shelf paper, and then I learned that it was outgassing toxic vinyl, and I went, oh my God, and I ripped it out. But, you know, I see people, I do a lot of consulting where people have me come to their homes and find the toxic chemicals. And I can't tell you how many times they've got these built-in closets with these cabinets and these shelves and stuff. Those are particle board. They're just reeking formaldehyde. And it just goes on and on like this. So one thing to do is to start identifying where those sources of indoor air pollutions are. And there's a lot of information on my website and in my books about what that is. But the thing that I would really recommend is that just right away, get an air filter. Get an air filter that is really going to do the job. And that way, you start reducing the air pollutants while you're removing the sources. And you can just immediately improve your indoor air quality with the right kind of air filter. And again, I've put some information on, if you go to toxicfreetalkradio.com, look for today's show and in the archives, and there's some information there about the air filter that I use in my home, even though I don't have any toxic things in my home. Toxic stuff is coming in from the outside. You can't keep it out. So this is something that we all need to be considering and taking care of in order to be healthy. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Dr. Stephen Gilbert, toxicologist and author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, and he's at toxipedia.org, and we'll be right back.
To invite you to take...
You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Dr. Stephen Gilbert from Toxipedia. And so we're in our last segment. It always goes by so fast. There's always so much information. So what else would you like to make sure we say about indoor or outdoor air pollution?
Well, it was really unfortunate. We should have divided this hour up into two parts and done indoor air pollution one week and outdoor air pollution next week. But because it is a big, complicated subject, and we all need to be paying attention to what we breathe. We're only given one set of lungs when we start out with, and it's really important to protect our lungs. And one of the biggest issues I cannot help but mention is tobacco products. You know, we need to never smoke indoors. It really pollutes the indoors. Because you get not only the tobacco smoke, secondhand smoke from indoor air pollution, but you also get a third-hand smoke because the walls and your clothing gets covered with tobacco products, which outgasses also. And so the child in particular, in the sense of this, inhale those products that are stuck on your clothes or on the walls of the indoor facility. So do not smoke indoors. Do not smoke to start with. Don't smoke, because you are, just think about the particulate. You exhale that smoke. The smoke is inside your lungs, all this particulate matter, all that stuff sticking in your lungs, moving in your body. It's just not good for you. The other thing I want to just hit on really quickly is industrial issues, because I think the workplace is a really important part. A lot of the adults will spend quite a bit of time in the workplace. A very serious source of potential contamination. Asbestos, for example, silica. So asbestos causes mesothelioma, so you really want to avoid asbestos. And, some older homes have asbestos that will wrap the ducting for their furnaces. So be really careful of that in older homes. And you want to watch out for asbestos in the workplace also. And silica has been another big issue. So silica will be sand. It comes from cutting concrete, from grinding products like that. And it causes silicosis, which can also be fatal in the lung damage. You also carry that stuff home with you. So take home products end up in the home, and it can damage the indoor air pollution. It can contribute to indoor air pollution. Paints, formaldehyde, glues, you know, you mentioned your cabinetry, indoor cabinetry, that stuff will outgas for quite a while. Formaldehyde and other sealants were used to make those products. And you can have commercial you know, cleaning products, but also personal care products. Those things are really important. Anything that's got some kind of perfume in it is outgassing chemicals. And you got to be thinking about that. If you have something that has perfume in it, it is built to off-gas chemicals. And some part of those chemicals they use are phthalates, as well as other complex chemicals that make up perfumes. And
there's
air fresh at the same fire
thousands
sheets.
Thousands of toxic chemicals in perfume. Thousands of toxic chemicals in perfume. Anything that is perfume or scented or anything. I mean, that's one thing that you can do if you were to just remove all the scented products from your life. You would greatly reduce indoor air pollution.
Yeah, and things like, I mean, if you have an attached garage or garage attached to your house or indoor garage, you drive your car in that garage, that car is off-gassing a whole bunch of chemicals, oils and gases and things like that, which contribute to indoor air pollution of your home. So it's really important to be thoughtful about where pollution might come from. Cars, mold, dust, you know, you really got to be careful about mold. You want to reduce the amount of mold. You don't need to clean mold, for example. If you do have mold in your bathroom, just use soap and water on it, soap and hot water, warm water on the mold. Do not use chlorinated products on mold because it's not killing the mold off. It's just bleaching it out so you can't see it. So about get down there and just scrub it away and then reduce the moisture. You want to, mold feeds on moisture. So you just want to reduce the mold. You want to reduce the food source for all kinds of products like that, material like that.
Well, I think we've given a good overview. We still have about 5 minutes left. Let's see, what else can we say about indoor air pollution? What else would you like to say?
Well, I would like to just, you know, you have to be really careful with indoor and outdoor pollution. And I think to come back to outdoor for a minute, I think it's really important that we try to figure out how to reduce greenhouse gases that are material that is contributing to greenhouse gases and contributing to global warming and climate change. And the EPA has been doing a lot of work on that, trying to reduce the amount of pollutants that are large industrial manufacturers and electrical producing companies like coal and gas, electric utilities, are major pollutants, major point source of pollution. We really need to reduce in the long run, the long term. We need to figure out how to do that. We need to start producing individual our own electricity. And we got to be, because that reduces air pollution, outdoor air pollution. So I think reducing air pollution is all of our responsibilities. Driving less, mass transit's really important. How do we increase the mass transit in our society so we do not have to drive our own personal cars anymore? Walking is really important. Like I have a meeting at 10:30. I'm close enough to want to walk, so it takes me about 20, 25 minutes to walk to this. So as soon as I get out of this call, I'm going to walk to my next meeting. So how do we do things like that? How do we reduce our contribution, our carbon footprint, so we are not producing those greenhouse gases that on the long run are going to cause us a lot of pain and trouble?
I know that at different times in my life, just the choice about where you live and how you organize things in your life, like I work at home, so I don't have any commute at all. I don't need to take a bus, nothing. I just go from the bedroom to the kitchen to my desk. And earlier in my life, I lived in San Francisco, and I worked downtown, and so I lived in an area where I could walk to work in San Francisco, that it took me about 20 minutes to walk downtown, but I walked every day and I walked back. And now where I live, I don't have to go to work, but I have other activities that I do. But how much do I drive? From everything that I do is within about a 5 mile radius, really. So, it's very rarely I will drive across the bridge to Tampa, maybe once a month. But otherwise, I'm just in this little tiny radius. It's a little tube wide for me to walk it. But if I had like a little electric scooter, which I'm seriously considering getting, if I had a little electric scooter, I could just scooter around to these places because they're so close to each other. And so that's very different from people who are like sitting in commute traffic for 2 hours every day. And
yeah,
so, yeah.
A really great point. You know, commuter traffic in Seattle, they have horrible traffic now. You know, and I mostly work on a house too, so it's really important to be able to make your lifestyle choices like that so you try not to contribute to the air pollution that's out there already.
Yeah, I think that with some wise decisions like that, that we can reduce the outdoor air pollution that we're creating or experiencing. I mean, I remember there was a time when I was working in San Francisco and I was living in Oakland, which is across the Bay Bridge from San Francisco, and I was driving a little Fiat X19 sports car, and I do this commute with the top off, and I'd just be sitting there for hours in the commute traffic, breathing all of this exhaust. It was, I mean, things that I used to do just horrify me now that I know what the consequences are. But I know that there are millions of people who are doing this.
Yeah, there are. There are all kinds of people that are producing, you know, just seeing a lot of traffic and, you know, really breathing in those fumes from the cars around them, which is not, in the long run, is not good for our lungs, not good for the future of the Earth and the planet, and not good for our children. So how we got to be thoughtful about that. We need to be more considerate of our lungs and everybody else's lungs. So think of all, when you're out there driving or polluting or using electricity even, think about where it's coming from and all the pollutants that you're producing and you're breathing in at the same time. So it's really important to be thinking about that, thinking about how we manufacture our homes. So a lot of glues and other solvents in our home. Our cars are manufactured with a lot of solvents. You think of the paint on the car. Paint produces a lot of chemicals to these newer paints. You know, we need to be thoughtful about that. We need to reduce the amount of paint we're using. We're using only water-based paints. Stay away from all oil-based paints because they have a lot of oil and solvents in them. We need to reduce the amount of oil and petroleum products we're using, figure out where they are. And we need good regulation. I hate to come back to the politics again and again, but we need good regulation.
We can.
Know what's in the products we're using. We need to know what chemicals are in the dryer sheets, the air fresheners, and perfume. So we know what we can avoid and know how to do that better, know what to buy.
That is a really big problem, is that manufacturers don't disclose what is in the product. And that's a topic for a whole show in and of itself.
Yes, it
because is. This is something, I mean, I've been a consumer advocate for more than 30 years now, and the biggest problem I always have is I can't find out what's in the product. And if I can't find out what's in a product, then I just don't use it. And there are, you know, there are ways that you can get around and find out some of the ingredients. But the difference is that now I'm starting to see that there are websites that fully disclose their ingredients. And not only that, they tell you where they're from and all about each ingredient, and they're very open about that. And those, I think that that's the where we're moving, is in that direction. Because we really, how can we make decisions as consumers unless we know what's in the product?
And I would encourage your listeners to go to websites that are, like EPA's website on air is really good. American Lung Association is great. My book has, I think, a pretty good chapter on air pollution and some other material about that. But I think we need to educate ourselves about the products that are produced.
And we need to go because it's the end of the show. Thank you so much,
goodness.
Dr. Gilbert. I know it goes by so fast. You've been listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. Be well.